Here's the message now in progress. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have another challenge on our hand. The world is in a lot of trouble. No, it's not climate change. Forget this nonsense about global warming. That's not really true. But the world does have a problem. You know, when I was in high school, I remember back in 1973, they were telling us that a new ice age is coming. You all probably wouldn't know about this because they were bragging, not really bragging, but the way the proliferation of that information is as if they were also constantly announcing it. A new ice age is coming. We studied North America. You know, those of you who don't know, I grew up in school in Jamaica. And so you study North America, they tell you how the ice age and the ice was all over the continent, and that's what helped create the Great Lakes. They have so much ice were accumulated there that it sink in. Now that's possible because of what Satan did when he created darkness, and therefore there was no light from the sun to melt things, so you're gonna have freezing. But anyway, what happened is that supposedly receded, and of course you had the Great Plains as a part of the results. And if you travel from here to California, which we have by car, you can look at some places out in New Mexico and Arizona where you can see rocks high up. We say, wait a minute, they're so smooth. They were obviously underwater. Well, of course, we had a great flood because people wouldn't behave themselves, so God had to flood them out. And so you see those things are left as a record for you and I to learn from them. But anyway, in high school days, they were telling us that there is going to be another ice age. Well, when the world started to get a little warmer, at least by their records, because what they're doing is this, paying attention and writing things down. It's not that there were records. Remember now, there's a change if there's a record, but it's generally not a record, and yet they make all this fuss. But what I am trying to convey to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that they suddenly change from this cooling that we were having to global warming. And I don't know when you may have been following this information, but they went to Davos, World Economic Forum, and their goal was to brag about, at least, you know, explain to the world that we need to give up this and give up that because of the carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide and so on, all those things are gonna cause the earth to get too warm. That was their goal, and they talk about it and they're gonna express it. And they went there and they had freezing weather. Freezing weather. And so they had to drop that claim. There was a ship that went down to Antarctica to try to tell us that the ice is melting, and it froze. The thing froze when they were there, and so the ship got stuck. It was there for quite a few months. The ship that is going to prove that it is too warm and the ice is melting got stuck in the ice, and so they were there for quite a few months. They couldn't come back with their lives, and so they kind of dropped that. So they change the expression now. So nowadays you hear the modern expression is climate change. So they can talk about warming or cooling at the same time, be using the same words. They don't really realize what they're talking about. Anyway, I'm saying this to digress for a minute, because what I am trying to convey to you is that the world is running into trouble. And part of that trouble, by the way, is creeping into the church. Part of that trouble is creeping into the church. Now, for those of us who believe God and trust in Him, in His divine protection, in 3 John, there's only one chapter, it says, chapter 1, remember there's only one chapter, 3 John, verse 2, well, let's go ahead and start with verse 1. It says, to the elders, unto the well-beloved. Wait a minute, you know something? Mr. Sunday sent this thing to me yesterday.
What?
He sent this, all this. I'm going to look at it. I just saw it. It just dawned on me now. the elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things. That's verse 2. I wish above all things that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. So he says he wish above all things that we in the church, in the, well, in the world too, but also especially in the church, that we prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. Generally, we would say your soul, and we're talking about, you know, salvation, but it is more than that, your whole body, everything, okay? And so he says, you wish above everything that you prosper and be in health, even as you prosper, spiritually speaking. Are we together, folks? That is what he wishes. But yet I'm telling you that the world is in a lot of trouble. North America is in a lot of trouble. And if you drill down and follow this information, it's far worse than I'm going to be able to share it with you today. I don't have time. But that's not my goal, because what I want us to realize is that God is with us. And he wants to bless us. He wish above all things that we prosper and be in health, even as our soul prospers. Now, before we go any further, I want to touch on one more warning. By the way, thank you for that reading in Ecclesiastes. I think that was chapter 5. And so, thank you for that, sir. You know, because the point is that we need to become prepared, come with an expectation to hear from God. You know, one of the things that I learned very quickly when I started attending services back in the days of Worldwide, the earlier days, I remember some people used to warn me and say, you look a bit too enthusiastic. Because I believe, you know, I mean, I still believe the same thing, I haven't changed. If you mess up during the week, you come and you come to the minister and say, hey, listen, I need prayer, so and so happened. And if you for real, both of you can pray and God will deliver you from whatever it is. That was my understanding, that was my belief. Now, it turned out that some people didn't act like that, didn't believe that, and some of the ministers certainly didn't have any faith, and so they didn't grasp this. And so other people in the congregation were warning me wisely, because, you know, back in those days, you don't do right, they throw you out of the church. I mean, they just disfellowship you just like that till you come to your senses, supposedly. They were wrong, but they didn't understand it. That's the knowledge they had at the time. So I come with expectation. And so, my point is that not many people are grasping the understanding of coming with expectation. But I want to make sure that is a part of your thinking. Anybody who is in tune with this ministry should know that we're dead serious about that. So, in Proverbs, the 13th chapter, and verse 15, I want us to begin to recognize, by the way, in science, when things happen repeatedly on a regular basis, we refer to that as a law. It must be repeatable. It must be regular, in other words, consistent. And so you decide to define it as a law in science. Are you with me? That's what the law there means. Now, when you're talking about the teachings of God, the fundamentals, that can also be called law. And that's what they're saying here in verse 14. The law of the wise is a fountain of life. The law, the way we operate, the wise person, it's like a fountain. It's bubbling over. What is going to give you? Life. It's constantly pouring life into you. No matter how the enemy try to keep you down, you keep going. Why? Because there is life in you. The law of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. Because some people foolishly embrace things that are killing them. And they don't realize it until they are in deep trouble. Now verse 15 says, good understanding, because I want you to grasp this thing, a good understanding gives favor. You go somewhere and people are giving you trouble, and you start to pray right then.
and God sent angels to change their thought thinking. Because remember now, all thoughts come from the spirit realm. So they hear angels come and just tell them, little boy, go. And they just all of a sudden, sorry, that's okay. Let you go. You'll find favor. You might go somewhere. I remember we went years ago. We used to do what we call it's like a work project for the church. And we'd just go out, and sometimes we'd make like about $15,000 to $20,000 in one day. Just people from the church just go visit, you know, these places, and we work. Everybody just go as a group. It's only about 30 or 40 of us, and we might make $15,000 to $20,000 sometimes, just like that. But anyway, I went there, and they usually have a lot of food that they're, you know, serving. And so I, you know, they, when you serve everybody, you can get some lunch. And the gentleman said to me, hey, Elon, you have any children? And I said, yes. And I said, 4 boys. He said, oh man, they eat cake, don't they? And I mean, he was already going away where the cake was. And he gave me 3 big cakes. I said, take this to them. Then let them enjoy some cake. And so I'm putting up the cake, and there he comes with some more spaghetti and some of the macaroni and cheese, that kind of stuff, and so on. And then he gave us some drink. Everybody was just looking at me. I found favor. I didn't even have to ask for it. Other people are coming begging and tell some of them go away. Here it is, he just gave me this thing, just like that. I found favor. Well, here it is now. He's saying in verse 15 of Proverbs 13, we don't understand it gives favor, but the way of the transgressor, that's the ones who won't listen to God. I don't care how smart they think they are transgressing. When we go contrary to the word of God, we are transgressors. Their way is going to be hard. Now, he just told you before, you wish above all things you need good health and prosper. And yet, many in the world, and some now increasingly in the church, are not prospering. Well, what is wrong? Well, you could zero down and say, well, this, that, and so on. But I want to focus on one main one, because this is the problem I see. And by the way, I'm not talking about anybody in particular. And I tell the people in Kenya, because I teach the same thing to them this morning. I planned this message some 3 months ago. And I remember telling Brother Stephen, I said, you know, we have to get to it. And so, you know, I scheduled at the beginning of sometime in December. But anyway, you know, we want to focus on the family, because the disintegration of the family is a problem in the world, and it is creeping into the church, and it doesn't have to be that way. In Matthew 11 chapter, I'm not going to turn there, but I just want to go ahead and quote it. You can turn if you like. Verse 28, where Jesus said, come unto me all you labor and are heavy laden. In other words, you have a challenge. It is too big for you. You can't handle it. It's too heavy. The little kids would say, it's too heavy. I can't lift it up. Well, it's too heavy. He said, come unto me, all you that have spiritual challenges, and I will give you rest. For my yoke, take my yoke. In other words, connect up to me, hook up to me. My yoke is easy, as my burden is light. So the point is this. Wait, let me make sure I'm quoting it correctly. Proverbs, Matthew, rather, chapter 11. And let's see, verse 28 says, come unto me, all you that are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, verse 29, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. You shall find rest for your soul, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So he's telling you, it's an open invitation. By the way, you know, salvation is an invitation process. Nobody can just go ahead and just go get salvation like that. You know, you can't purchase it, obviously. It is an invitation. This is part of the invitation right here. Yes, he expanded. By the way, how does he extend it today? Through the church. Just through the church. There's some fundamentals that I'll just throw it as we go along. So what I am saying, ladies and gentlemen, that we're going to learn now to focus in the church on the family, because that is the apparatus, the mechanism that God has used to be able to teach some fundamentals. Let me tell you something. If the children, by the time they're 13, the teenage stage, when they become 13, if they learn the fundamentals, no problem through life. At that time, now they're gonna, what you people use expression, they talk back. No, but they're supposed to be talking at that stage. Even a child is known by their deeds and by their comments, what they do, whether they're good, whether it is good or bad. You're gonna see. So people, our folks, not getting it. No. Shut up. No, let them talk. It is their turn to talk and time for you to listen. Now, what I am saying is that we need to understand these fundamentals. Now, here it is. You have a young man named Samson in the book of Judges, the 14th chapter. I'm just going to read a few verses because he did not understand this thing. Now, let me tell you something about Samson's background. His daddy was so close to God that he prayed and said, send the angel to come back and talk to us. And the angel came. He had access. You know, people like, well, I want so-and-so to pray for me. Well, if anybody had anointing and have access, Samson's daddy did. You can look about that in chapter 13. But let's go to 14 verse 1. And Samson went down unto Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came home and told his father and mother and says, listen, I'd like to marry this woman. And they say, what? There ain't nobody around here, nobody in the church. You can't find nobody. All of a sudden, you're going to go down there dealing with these pagans. That's the equivalent today, you know. People not getting the message. And it's not that God and is short. It's that people are not willing to follow his lead, the lead of the Spirit. So he come on and tell them that. Well, you can read the rest of the chapter in your own time. Verse 3 says, his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of their brethren and among all my people that you go to take a wife of the uncircumcised? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleased me. This boy is a fool. He just laid the foundation right there by that statement for a short life and a destructive life. That one statement alone just did it. How did it happen? Because honor your mother and your father, that your days may be long upon the land. That's one of the laws. And he violated that. Let me tell you something. There are laws, and let me just go ahead and break this down in the terms of physics and non-physics. There are laws that are physical, like the law of gravity. You know, things actually move against each other. They could be proportional. I don't want to get too deep, but my point is that their physical movement and operation, for example, water flowing down a stream and so on, it goes from a higher elevation to a lower elevation. You don't see water flowing uphill. No. There has to be some other force to allow that to go. We normally use what they call pumps, and they have different ways to do it even in ancient times. But my point is that was a physical law. Just like you're driving down the street and you try to stop, your car don't stop immediately. You have what you call inertia. That's the tendency to keep on moving. Those are physical laws. The law of gravity. You walk over a big, wide hole, are you going to fall into it? Just like they did in Nicaragua, and just shortly after the year 2000 when that sinkhole was break out. Right there, people walking on the street. And many of them just fell into their death, right? Just like that. The law of gravity, it's always working. You have some water in a cup and you hold it in your hand, it's not going to fall. You are operating against the law of gravity. You let it go and it's going to fall immediately. So it's always in operation. Now, there are other laws that are operation also. Spiritual laws. People don't understand that. And so when he says the way of the transgressor is hard, they're going contrary to God, spiritually speaking, and don't realize that it is going to go against their benefit and for their, whatever their circumstances are. But good understanding will also use those same laws to where people start to give you faith. Ah, say something about you, you're different. And they start to give you faith. They do things, they offer you stuff. That's generally all people do. Now, sometimes they might send something in the mail and so on, but you get the idea. So what I am saying to you is that there are spiritual laws. Now, the family structure, while it is physical, is built on spiritual laws that a lot of people are not
getting. They are not getting that understanding. And as a result, people are, should say, losing out. They don't realize it. No, it doesn't have to be that way. God says, above all things, that he wish that you prosper and be in health. So how in the world can you violate God's laws and expect to reap God's best? It's not going to work. Adolf Hitler promised the people in Germany that they're going to have blessings, or should say good times, for 1,000 years. Now, first of all, he's not going to live that long, so he can't guarantee he's not God. God did not say so, but there he is for 1,000 years. He promised that. Of course, what he brought on them was just destruction. The whole country got torn up. So what I am saying to you, ladies and gentlemen, people are violating certain laws, somehow thinking that they are exempt. No, it worked for everybody. For everybody. All right, let's take it a step further. Samson got down there, and he got out of line. He violated the law. And like a lot of people, they think, well, I am Mr. Big Stuff, I can do whatever I want. Well, listen to me. If you are one of those, drop that right now, because you're going to suffer. Nobody's going to mock God. He always have the last word. In Deuteronomy, the 7th chapter, let's turn to it. The book of Deuteronomy, chapter 7. Because I want to see the church get blessed. It won't take a few years, really, and I guarantee you, I don't care if you don't have nothing. If you listen to the teachings that I am giving, I guarantee you God is going to bless you. When I went to Africa, the Lord told me, he said, you tell the people, give them my word, and if they do what I say, I will bless them. No, they've been growing leaps and bounds. We have 4+ congregations now. They're asking some of the people, some 180 people is asking us to set up another congregation for them. That's going to be 5. Well, they are the areas that they need to grow in, but I'm just trying to express to you that people are benefiting from it, and you can be one of the ones too that benefit. You might necessarily have a large congregation where you are, but you can enjoy some of the benefits that God has made, because he made this earth for us. The meek shall inherit the earth. It's not for the pagans. It's for those who are willing to do what God says. Yes, the pagans are going to have some, but it's only for a little while. Then they die and somebody else take their place. But if we obey God, he'll bless us. I got a, what do you call this thing? Postcard. Well, it wasn't a postcard. I got a little letter, a note from a lady. She has been a recipient of the weekly teachings. She wrote us last year and she said, well, I don't write like I used to. And I'm looking at her writing. Her writing was very good, much prettier than mine. You see, I don't write as like I used to, I don't see as well anymore. She was over 100 years old. She was writing like that. There's about something about some of these people, because, Dr. Greer, when he wrote me a check, he was 99. When he wrote me a check, I went over there, did some little stuff for him, and he asked if I wanted a beer, and I tell him no, and so he said, all right, well, you just buy something, and he write a check and give it to me. And I look at the check, I did cash it, but I kept it for a good while, kept looking at it, because his writing was so pretty. He lived to 102, I don't know, I don't remember what age he died, I did his eulogy, but he lived past 102, because I remember the city came and gave him a thing there, but my point was that God is with these people. And I remember him saying, and he said some wise saying, somebody was there pestering him, asking him for stuff. He got a lot of money. And he said to me, I'm trying to tell them that Jesus is the answer. I'm telling them that Jesus is the answer. And I had to smile, because he was right. He's still the answer today, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, we're focusing on the family. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, God is giving instructions. And remember now, Israel is the guinea pig. He had to talk to somebody. If he didn't use Israel, he could have used the people in Jamaica
Or he could have used the people in South America. He chose the nation of Israel. And so he's talking to them and he's sharing certain information so that we don't lose it. And he says in verse, verse 1. When the Lord your God shall bring you into the land where you go to possess it, and has cast out many nations before you, and he gave them the name, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, 7 nations stronger than you. Now, how does that translate today? When God, when you come to the understanding of who God is, and he starts to take away the obstructions that are there in your way. This is like the nations that are before Israel. So he drove those nations away, not all at once. If they all went away at once, what would happen? Somebody would have to bury them. Israel would be busy burying people every day if they all of them just started to drop dead. So no, he let them over time and they bury their own dead, but they decrease in numbers. There are a lot of Chinese people coming to Jamaica, slowly taking over some of the things in Jamaica. If the people turn to God, over time, they will all disappear and the people back in Jamaica could possess it. The same thing in America. The same thing over in Africa. People not understanding how the spiritual laws work. So here he says, you will need some basic things now to understand it, otherwise you won't reap. So verse 2 says, and when the Lord your God shall deliver them before you, you shall smite them. In other words, don't make no agreement with them. Back then they were told to go ahead and shun yourself from them. Verse 3, neither shall you make marriages with them. Your daughter you shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shall you take unto your son. People in the church want to marry people outside the church and then expect God's best. No. Can they receive some? Yes. But it's more challenging. Most people are not getting it. Most people are not getting it. That's why I'm preaching it. So verse 4 says, for they will turn away your son from following me, that they may serve other gods, so will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy you suddenly. Do not go with these foreign gods. Now, what about the people who are already married to somebody who is not in the church? Well, to begin with, you need to start to pray. No. I'm not criticizing. I'm just helping you to build up. What do you do at this point? You're going to have to, one, number, pray. Pray for yourself that you come to your senses and recognize the hand of God. Number 2, you start to pray for that other person so that they come to God, that they understand, because you're obligated now at this point to make sure, because you're bonded with that spirit. So you want to make sure now that they become clean. And the third thing is that you're going to have to make sure now that you are wise enough, especially if you're not the leader, to make sure you'll be an example and a light to others. You know, that's a problem we have in the world today. Most Christians like to brag. That's what I've observed. Very few understand the concept of humility. That's really what is part of the problem. We'd have less trouble with the people in the world if we learn to be humble. We're not to always tell them when they're wrong. Just demonstrate by living for Jesus. I notice you don't do any work on the Sabbath. I don't always tell them the Sabbath is the seventh day. Next thing you start an argument. I have a serious appointment and I must keep. Over time you can tell them. But I don't always tell them. I don't understand. See, I remember this gentleman years ago. He ended up being my manager. And he says,
There's this man who comes Friday evening, you can't get him to do nothing. On Saturday, you can't get him to do nothing. What do you think about that? And I say, well, you know, have you stopped to think that he may be right? Now his cigar fell out of his mouth because of the response I gave him. He picked it up and he walked away. I didn't tell him that the man was right. Of course the guy was right. Well, he come back at another time and asked me some more about these things, and I started to explain it to him. And he said, you know, I hadn't thought about it. Now, you see, I have a rapport now. It's not the first time now I'm talking to you, because I run him away the first time, then you're going to have his antenna going to go up and you're going to have a problem. A man offended is harder to be won than a strong city. So you don't want to offend. You're going to have to use wisdom. They don't know. Their parents didn't tell them. I remember picking up the kids some years ago from the elementary school down the street, and they were telling about this boy was so rude, and I said, did you explain this to them? And he said, no. I said, why not? He said, let his dad told him. I said, well, he may not even live with his dad. See, they understand that I'm there sharing this kind of stuff, and they expect it to be the case for other people, but that was not the case there. And so the point is that they didn't learn that discipline, all right? So what I am saying to you, ladies and gentlemen, he said, no, we can't mix. We don't want you to mix with these people just any old way. Can you interact by business transaction? Yes. But are they going to be your best buddy where you're going to run? No, you can't do that. They will turn your heart away from following God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, God is giving more instructions along this line, because some people say, well, that's Old Testament. Well, let's go to the New Testament, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I want us to understand. Start with verse 1. Now it says, concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. People misunderstand this. You have a Roman organization. They have people they call nuns and this kind of nonsense. They forbid the preachers from getting married. They turn out to be pedophiles, most of them, because they don't understand the word of God, and so they corrupt it because they're not being led by the Spirit. That's why. And they, what they're teaching is wrong. Look at verse 2. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. Now, you have the fools these days trying to tell me, well, I don't have to get married. Listen, God says it is not good for the man to be alone. And yet you have a modern generation trying to tell us, oh, we cannot, no, you can't, you're an idiot. You're not going to reach your full potential without doing things God's way. And so, he says, nevertheless, it's good for a man, it is good to avoid fornication. Let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Everybody needs to submit to the word of God. So in the preliminary stages for the young people, and you know that scripture, by the way, you can look it up meanwhile, and so you can quote it in a minute. Yes, the scripture, prepare your field outside and then get ready to do it. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. Because I want every one of the young people to understand this. And so we need to do things God's way. You can announce it first, but then we'll go ahead when you're ready. So, yeah, he says, let every man have their own wife and every woman have their own husband. No excuses. That's how it is supposed to be. God designed you to operate a certain way, and you can plan all you want, you can pretend all you want, but you will never get to God's best unless you get there. What's the scripture, sir?
Proverbs 24, verse 27.
All right, go ahead and read for me, please. Proverbs 24 and verse 27.
It says, finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, then build your house.
So he's saying, prepare yourself outside. Prepare yourself outside, and then you go ahead and you're going to build your house. That means get your occupation together, get your skills together, get you position yourself financially so that when you get married, you don't have to worry about it. I remember talking to my wife about these things, and I said, listen, when we have kids, you have to stay home with them. I know just beginning the day stages where people say, well, women have to go work. You know, when the women in church try to tell me that my wife must go get a job, and I tell them, you all are confused. No, she already have a job taking care of the children. I tell you something, God showed me favor in such a way back then that, I mean, these kids were flying on airplanes, going to the feast. We were, what, 20, I don't know, we were in our late 20s. They were going, I remember, but Eastern Airline used to be an airline. They'd been out of business long ago. And I remember when we go on the plane, you know, the pilot, he was so happy, he saw us, he said, youngsters, have you all ever been inside a cockpit yet? And they said, no. He said, come on up here, come look at what we look like. And he bring all of them up there to go show them in front of the plane. He was so excited when he saw them. We go back and we go sit in our seat, and before they start serving anybody, they come giving us stuff to drink. They were so excited seeing us. Where are we going? We're going to the Feast of Tabernacles. I remember I was at the job, and I just changed job, and I was telling the folks I'm going to go to the feast, and they said, well, you know, we can't pay you. And I said, that's all right, you know. And so they said, well, where are you going to get all this money? And I said, look, I've been working for a long time, you know. And so that one of the managers was at the door when the phone rang. My wife called and she said, what should I do? And I said, look, take $1,000 out of this account and put into this so you can use it. And when I hung up the phone, she said, well, you all get that kind of money. And I said, get out of here. Because what do you mean? That was petty cash to me at the time. We had enough money to do what we needed to do. They said they didn't know about second tithes and things like that. By the way, most of the people I deal with after that, they end up following Jesus. Everyone, except for one. There's one fellow, he's still stubborn. But the point I'm trying to make is, I mean, other people, they kept quiet now. You know, Marcus, he's dead serious. You know, his faith's so strong. They just talk about me. I mean, you think I'm there doing something, you know, I'm every day working miracles. But the point is that I stood out. But what I am saying to you is that he says, prepare your works without and make it fit for yourself in the field so that you get establish yourself. And afterwards, build your house. He wants you to plan now to prepare so that mom doesn't have to go work. Poor Dave Ramsey keeps trying to stress that over and over. It's okay for her to stay home with the kids. No, if that's all you get, that's all you get. But what I'm saying is that it doesn't have to be that way. The children need to understand how life is supposed to be. When Jesus comes back, what do you think is going to happen to the moms that we have at that time? Do you think they're going to go out and say, well, I have a job and I'm going to be away from my family. You know, these women are going to run all over the place, stop, or they're going to fly to go meet with so-and-so, and they're gone 3, 4, 5 days and they stay in a hotel. And oh. There's a good friend of mine. He was telling me, I'm going to invite you to certain events and he's going to get me a hotel room. I said, no, you won't. Because I won't be coming. I don't put myself in those positions that I can compromise. Usually people go to a hotel and sleep around. No, I don't do that crap. I'm not interested. I used to go to the conferences. Sometimes I was the speaker. I always carry my wife with me. She looked forward to it. We go to Anaheim, California. And then we went to Colorado. Oh man, that was an interesting place. And we rode the train and stuff like that. One day it was snow, next day it was like 60 degrees. I mean, it was interesting. Just warm up just like that and it just gets real cold. You know, it's Bay of Colorado. It's an interesting place. But my point is that we went Denver, Colorado. But my point is that we go and I conduct myself a certain way. And I expect everyone who listens to the ministry to learn to do some things like that. So what I'm saying is to you is that whatever you're doing, you should always be focused on the family. Very, very important. You know, people don't realize that dating leads to marriage. Very important to understand. Samson did not get that. So he ended up losing his life. Oh yes, he was the toughest man. Nobody could have beat him up and so on. But after a while, God decided, listen, I'm not going to put up with you and your sleaziness. And so he just departed. He didn't even tell Samson he left. Same thing he will do to us in the church. He won't even tell you. Just leave you alone and you just get reduced to nothing. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, just in case anybody else, again, looking for New Testament scriptures, 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14 tells us clearly, do not be you not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship does righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion as light with darkness? So you need to understand these foundational principles. See, a lot of people, yeah, technically they know it, but they don't do it. That's part of the problem we have in the church. But I'm saying when you start to learn to do it now, that's when the power comes. See, people don't realize it. Yes, they want power. I want to go out there and pray. Well, I'm telling you now, if you're fudging over here and you're strong as your weakest link, then you're not going to get very far. So you practice doing the fundamentals. You're going to find that you have a lot of power. When you start to pray, God answers. All right? So, what does God expect from us then? Well, look and turn to Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7. I want us to look at something here quickly. Because we leave an old way of life. In verse 5, it says, for when we were in the flesh, that's what we used to be before we came to Jesus. When we were in the flesh, the motions of sin which work in by law did work in our members to bring forth fruit unto death. When we used to live the old way without knowing God, and now we have the Spirit of God, it's different. But before we had the Spirit of God, our way was leading to death. The world's way is leading to death. That's why they're dying. Why is the population of North America decreasing? If it wasn't for immigration, it would have been reduced to nothing. Because the people are living for debt. They don't admit it, but that's what it is. People are not getting it, ladies and gentlemen. They're not getting it. And I want the church to understand it so that we don't fall into that trap. Look at verse 6. But now we are delivered from that law, from that way of life. What being that being dead wherein we were held, that we should serve in newness of the Spirit, not in the oldness of the letter. We don't operate like that anymore. We live the new way so that we can prosper. We live the new way so that we become a blessing. Imagine the stubbornness of an individual who lived their life in such a way that they bring a curse on their family. See, people don't realize in Deuteronomy chapter 30, people don't realize that when we go contrary to God, we're bringing trouble on ourselves. And not just us, but on our children. Would you set your child on fire? No, I would never do such thing, but you can curse them. That's another way. Look at what it says in Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 19. I called heaven and earth and to record this day against you. God is saying heaven and earth is a witness against us. Whether we do good, whether we do bad, heaven and earth is a witness. Heaven is watching, the angels are observing, the other people out there are observing too. The people on earth are observing us too, whether we do good or bad. That's why he said, make our light shine. You might say, well, I don't have to tell nobody about Jesus. Just by your living,
tell people about what you believe about Jesus. And so he says, I call heaven and earth to this day against you, that I have set before you life and death. He says, what you really have, because people think, well, I'm free. Well, what are you free to do? To make a choice. You have a free to live right. You have a free to live wrong. You live right, it leads to life. You live wrong, it leads to death. Look at what he says again. Let's read it again. I have set before you life and death, blessings and cursings. It's another way of describing it. The life is blessing, cursing is death. Blessings and cursings. Therefore, just in case somebody out there is a knucklehead, therefore, choose life that both you and your children or your seed may live. Are you telling me that by what I do determine whether or not my children down the road are going to prosper? Yes, it does. When I first learned this thing, I made sure I started to pay close attention. I paid close attention because they won't be able to say I messed up so that they got hindered. No. You know, life is like a relay. And you want to wait until you get the baton before you start running your leg. They have what you call a zone, you change over, you know, the baton, you know, and understand the athletics. But my point is this, somebody run and give the baton to you, and then you give it to somebody else. That's how life is. My parents ran, they did what they could, they're supposed to do their best, they are no longer on the scene. I have my baton now and I'm giving it to the next generation. You want them to do their best. The last thing you want to do is when you get the baton, everybody else is going through the finish line. You know you're going to lose. But that's what we're doing when we hinder the children, when we refuse to obey God. Therefore, we bring a curse on them. He said, well, I don't care, no matter whether you care or not. I just told you these laws are eternal. They're spiritual. They work, whether you believe them or not. 1 + 1 = 2, whether you believe it or not. Well, I count the Roman way. It doesn't matter how you do it. 1 + 1 = 2. So he says, I call to heaven, and earth as a witness against you, that I've set before you life and death, blessings and cursing. So choose life that both you and your children may live, that you may love the Lord your God, and that you may obey his voice, and that you may cleave unto him, for he is your life. He is the foundation. Until you get him, you ain't got nothing. I remember this gentleman was explaining to me, he ran into an accident, he bumped into somebody, he had some kind of car, I forget what it was. And he was saying to me, if I had a car that I have to act like that over it, I would get rid of it. Because the guy was acting like it was the end of the world. If he had good insurance, are they going to pay for it? But he was just so angry about it. There are people like that today, they think because they drive a Tesla, and what do you call that other car? They have some it's a Mercedes-Benz. I saw one on television the other day. They were talking about, you know, well, it's starting at $95,000, you know. And I mean, they were acting like it's the end of the world. And I'm thinking, big deal, it carry you just like everyone else. But the bottom line is that people put emphasis on the wrong things. I'm saying to you, the things of God is more important. They determine our eternal destiny. And so, the long and the short of it, ladies and gentlemen, is that we understand this thing. And the family foundation is critical for people to learn to do these things. All right, let's take it a step further. What happened to those people then who fall through the cracks? Because from time to time, people are going to fall through the cracks. I was talking to the brethren over in Kenya, and I tell them, don't let this thing get to you. God has a solution. They have a lot of orphans over there. A lot. Not a few. A lot. But what I was trying to convey to them is you have this issue because they did not understand family life. They did not do right.
we're not going to sugarcoat it and pretend like they are like that because the white man came and took their land. Yes, he did. And part of the reason why he took their land is because they didn't know how to act sensible as a family. They fight against each other when they shouldn't. They do a lot of things they shouldn't have done. And they still are doing it. So you have all these children running loose on the street. I talked to a gentleman last week, and he's there trying to tell me what, oh, they have money available. You don't know what he's talking about. I've been there and I see it. The last thing you want to do is try to tell me lies, because then I don't want to fool with you. But I'm saying to you that if we embrace the truth, then we can ensure that we are passing on a blessing to the next generation, and we help prevent, or I should say subvert, the calamity that is coming on the Western world. Folks, you might not, listen to me, go on the internet and look it up. They're talking lately, what's the expression they give this thing? There's a word for it. Talking about, you know, declining population. All of the Western world is a declining population. Declining, and if it wasn't for immigration, they would have less people in Europe. If it wasn't for immigration, North America, the same thing, less people. What is wrong? The young people not getting married. When they get married, they won't stay married. The ladies are foolish. They allow the men to trick them into sleeping with them, and the men are sleazy and they don't want to exercise responsibility, so they won't get married. And so we have a declining demographics. That's the word. Demographics. It is becoming a calamity. People don't understand. I'm serious. It is a serious matter. The fall in demographics. And so the church can't afford to be in that. And then they make it even worse now. You have these so-called modern people are coming with this gay crap where they're trying to encourage women to marry women and men to marry. That's guaranteed that you're going to have a declining population. But not only that, you corrupt them, you bring in abomination. So you're going to end up with curses like you see in California where the whole city burned down. I looked at one the other day. I'm saying to myself, not one building left standing. Old city. These were wealthy people. They weren't poor people. No, they were wealthy people, very wealthy, living in there. They don't have not even one house left standing. Some places, I look at it, you can hardly even tell where the foundation was. Jeremiah chapter 2 and verse 15. God says he's going to cause a burning to come upon the land because the people don't want to be God and hear what he says. We don't want to be in that category. All right, so what happens then when you fall into that category? Let me hurry up and finish. In James, the second chapter, in verse 14, he says, what does it profit, my brethren, that a man say he has faith and have not works? Can faith save him? In other words, he does have, you know, academic understanding. He just have just words. He's just talking. He says, what does it profit somebody who just say, well, I'm a faith-filled man, I'm a Christian, you know. What's the expression they use these days? I'm spiritual. Do they believe in God? Not the God of the Bible. They don't believe in Jesus. They don't want to hear nothing about him. You start talking about him, they get upset, or they change the subject, or they leave the room. And they try to tell you that you're them on the same level. No, we're not. But no, I'm saying to you, people really fall into different calamities, and they need help. So he says, what does it profit to tell him that, verse 15 says, if a man or a sister be naked and destitute of daily food, they don't have it. That's one of the reasons why we started food program in Kenya, not so we can do it perpetually, but we had to give them something to start with. So that's why we started the food program. Now they're getting better at what they're doing, and I explained to them at the end of this year we're going to stop it. We have other things that we need to do, the same funds. Notice how God is operating now. He gives them the start, they get better, they can do it, they can now provide for themselves plus others, and then we're going to provide somewhere else. And so verse 16 says, "And one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be warm, be filled, notwithstanding you give them nothing, not these things which are needful to the body." What does it profit? He said, you say, oh man, you look, you know, God bless you, man. God bless you. God's going to take care of you, you know. Be blessed. See you tomorrow. They don't have no food. They don't have no money. They don't have nothing. And you just walk off and leave them. He says, what does profit that person? What good is it they hear from you? I told Pastor Moses, I said, listen, let me tell you something. When we went initially, I didn't realize all of this. And so we're talking to them. And I realized now that the people were getting sick. The children were getting sick. And I said, well, what do you feed them? He said, well, I just pray over them. I said, no, that's not good enough. It's good that you pray, but that's not good enough. And so that's how we started sending the money. And Brother Thomas helped stir us up. And so we increased it and so on. But that's how it got going. And then the people now who were grown-ups, after the children get, then they come and they get some too. And if so, now they no longer need that. We used to have, by the way, after we realized what was going on, we used to have family assistance fund. We stopped that now because they have grown better in that area. So I'm saying to you, ladies and gentlemen, that there are times when people are in precarious position and God expects us to help them. Well, what are we going to do about it? Well, we just see where we're supposed to help them. Look at Psalm 41 and verse 1. Psalm number 41 and verse 1. God is making a pronouncement here, and he's telling us now, and you want God's blessing? Well, heed his words. Look at what he says in Psalm 41, verse 1. Blessed is he that considers the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. At some point in the future, we're going to run into difficult situation. But you can remind the Lord. I've done it, so I'm telling you, it can be done. Remind the Lord. Father, you said in time of trouble, I could call upon you. I've been looking out for so-and-so, and before I even finish talking, people change their mind and come around and give me justice. I'm telling you, it works. Blessed is he that considers the poor. The Lord will rescue him in time of trouble. The Lord will preserve him and keep him alive, and he shall be blessed upon the earth, and you will not deliver him into the will of his enemies. In other words, he's going to let you escape. He's going to find a way for you to prosper and to keep going. Forget this talk about climate change and we're all going to die. It's not true. If you trust God, he will deliver you in times of trouble. Forget all this foolishness about, you know, you must give all your money to the government. That you're going to be poor and be happy. As the World Economic Forum is trying to tell us, that's not true. You can be prosperous and you don't have to have a lot of money to prosper. But you can continue promoting God's way of life and be an example. So I just want to encourage you along that line, ladies and gentlemen. You say, well, we got so many poor people. So we got so many poor people. Matthew chapter 26, verse 11. Mark chapter 14, verse 7. In the book of John, tell you. The poor we will have with us always. What was Jesus explaining? He said this. He made a statement. What's this fellow named? The one who, the Judas says, we could have sell this ointment and give money to the poor. You know, he never interested to do like that, but that was his argument. And the Lord says, leave him alone. Leave that lady alone. What she has done is a good thing to anoint me with her oil, with her expensive spikenard. Because the poor you have with them, all you always, you can always help them. Why is he saying that? Because he knew people would be disobedient. Not because he wants us to be disobedient, but because he knew people wouldn't listen. So he could confidently say, the poor you're going to have with you always. I explained this to Pastor Moses. I have to keep drilling into him. Because he has a lot of people that are constantly coming to him. Yesterday he called me. He had 32 people at his house. He asked me to pray. He said, before they go to sleep. That's a lot. But my point is, ladies and gentlemen, the poor you're going to have with you always. You just have to point them back to Jesus. That's the answer. Point them back to Jesus. That's where the family comes in. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to stop right here. There's a lot more I can say on the subject, but I want to encourage you along that line so that you recognize that God means that we prosper. He desires for us to prosper above all things, even as our soul prospers. He wants us to prosper. That's his desire. So we need to get this clear in our mind that that is the will of God. And when you start to follow him, I guarantee you over time, he's not going to do it immediately. You have to learn to walk with him. But over time, he's going to bless you so much that you're going to have more than enough. And not only that, you're going to be able to give to other people. You're beginning to see more about this, ladies and gentlemen, but I just thought I'd share that subject with you today. Thank you so much for listening.